Orville Freestone Jr. Sunday School, January 15th, 2012.
Turn in your Bibles to the 41st chapter of Isaiah. It is a joy to read these last 26 chapters of Isaiah, and I would suggest that whenever you feel down in the dumps, or you have the blahs or the blues, that you turn to these chapters and read them. I'm sure they'll cheer you. In the 40th chapter, the beginning of this second section began with, comfort ye my people, says your God. Comforting the people of Israel in all of their troubles. And this has been a comfort to them, and it is to us also. In the first chapter, we saw the voices in the wilderness, and we saw how they were quoted in the New Testament, and according to the New Testament, chapter 40 was fulfilled with the coming of John the Baptist and of Jesus. And very much of the effects of their coming is still future according to that chapter, but it is marvelous how closely Isaiah predicts the coming of the Lord. In the former section of Isaiah, in order to fully comprehend his message, we had to know something about the political and social events of his day and how he was addressing them. In this second chapter, we have to know something about the history that followed Isaiah's life. For we might say that in these 26 chapters, he wrote future history, if such a self-contradictory term is admissible. He wrote of things to come. In the 40th chapter, he wrote of the coming of John the Baptist and of Christ. And in the beginning with the 41st chapter, he tells of things that happened 200 years after his death. The prophet lived and prophesied about 40 years from about 75 or 80 into about 725 or 30, thereabout, about over 700 years before Jesus was born. But in chapter 41, he tells us about events that will occur in 200 years after his death. How would you like to try to tell what will happen 200 years from now? How would you like to predict or to guess who will be president of the United States in 2113? Well, that's analogous to what Isaiah did here in chapter 41. For he is speaking of the events that happened when the books of Ezra and Nehemiah were written. In the time when Ezra and Nehemiah returned to a ruined Jerusalem to rebuild the temple and the country. Looking back from this perspective, that doesn't seem like such a long time, but when we look at it as to our future, we can see what a long time that is. And even looking back to our history, 200 years ago, our country was only 35 years old. So for 200 years, many things happened. The prophet lived to see the Assyrians destroy Samaria, the capital of the kingdom of Israel. Judah continued for another 150 years or so, but he predicted that Assyria would not destroy Jerusalem, but Babylon would. And Babylon did. In the time of Jeremiah, the prophet, is when the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem. And that was about 125 to 50 years after Isaiah died. And Jeremiah predicted that their captivity in Babylon would be for 70 years. So after 70 years, they would be free to go back. This is what chapter 41 addresses, that time, 70 years after the Jerusalem was destroyed. So we'll read the first 8 verses now. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach, let them speak. Let us draw near for judgment. I'm reading in the English Standard Version, which in the second verse is somewhat different than the King James, but the overall meaning is the same. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step. He gives up nations before him, so that he tramples kings underfoot. He makes them like dust with his sword, like driven stubble with his bow. He pursues them and passes on safely by paths his feet have not trod. Who has performed and done this, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first and the last. I am he. The coastlands have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near and come. Everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. The craftsman strengthens the goldsmith, and he who smooths with the hammer, him who strikes with the anvil, saying, the soldering, it is good, and thy strength, and they strengthen it with nails so that it cannot be moved. Here he is prophesying the coming of Cyrus, the general who was leading the Median, the Persian, and the other allied armies to destroy Babylon. He does not name Cyrus in this chapter, but in a succeeding chapter he does give his name as Cyrus, and that was 200 years before Cyrus was the general of the armies against Babylon. So the Cyrus, who was called Cyrus the Mede, he was from the kingdom of Media, and the Kurds of northern Iraq and eastern Turkey are the present-day descendants of the ancient Kurds. And linguistically, they are related to the Persians. They are not Arabs. And then the Farsis of Iran today are the descendants of the ancient Parsis or Persians. And then the Elamites was the other nation allied with them that became a part of Persia. So things are aligning up very much today as they were in that day. This is another one of the sign of our times. The Kurds of northern Iraq are the only stable part of the nation of Iraq, because it is something of a patched-together nation. But the Kurds are coming into dominance, and the Persians are very much into dominance. And then we have the Iraq, all the center of the these battles in ancient times are very much into the everyday news today. I can remember back in World War II, the Middle East was considered to be the backwater of the world society and of world power. And Europe was the center of world power. It had been the imperial powers of the world for 200 to 300 years. There was France, there was an imperial power, there was Germany, an imperial power, and Britain, an imperial power, and Austria. What happened in just less than 75 years? Europe has become almost a backwater as far as world power and politics is concerned. Those nations are, even Britain, no longer a great power on the earth. Russia, who controlled 1/5 of the world's land surface and almost that much of the population of the world, today is something of a third world nation trying to be a great power. And the emphasis of all of the politics of the world today centers on this very land here. This so changed the world 500 years before the birth of Christ. So here, the Lord calls out. This is the voice of the Lord. Listen to me in silence, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. Let them approach. Let them speak. Let us draw near for judgment. The prophet is especially addressing the peoples of that are today in Jordan and Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt. For these were the peoples that Babylon had conquered, and now Darius the Mede and the Persians are coming against Babylon, and all of these nations tremble because of the conqueror from the east that is coming. But it is the voice of the Lord here that said, listen to me, O coastlands. Let the peoples renew their strength. That is, they gathered together into a league to try to hold off the approaching foe. Let them approach. Let them speak. Let us draw near for judgment. This was God's day of judgment for that time. It is He who stirred up this one from the east. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? Mighty Babylon simply crumbled before the armies of Cyrus the Mede. Who stirred up one from the east, whom victory meets at every step? Well, this is God speaking. He is the one who did it. He is the one who is not only all-powerful, as this implies, but He is the one who is active in the affairs of human events. He is the one who brought Cyrus from the east to destroy Babylon, and He is very much in control and directing the affairs of the world today. Iran, the modern Persians, think that they have a right to govern the East. They still dream of that ancient Persian empire, which they want to restore. And all of these, Russia and so forth, all of these powers that seem to be power centers, we read God is the one who calls them. He gives up nations before Him so that He tramples kings underfoot. That is, God gives these nations to Cyrus the Mede. He makes them like the dust with His sword and driven stubble with His bow. He pursues them and passes on safely. That is, he has easy victories. And when it is a fact of history that when the Persians conquered Babylon, that the whole world crumbled before them, and they formed what was to that time the greatest empire on earth. By paths his feet have not trod. Who has performed and done this? Calling the generations from the beginning, that is, calling peoples into being to do his will. I, the Lord, the first and the last, and I am he. I, the Lord, the first and the last, I am he. This is repeated in another chapter of Isaiah. And then when we come to Revelation, we have the New Testament answering, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. So it is the Lord who brings about all of these things. The coastlands, that is, all of the isles and coasts of the eastern Mediterranean, have seen and are afraid. The ends of the earth tremble. They have drawn near. Everyone helps his neighbor and says to his brother, be strong. That is, they formed a league against Persia, but it didn't stand. They even made new idols, to hoping their gods would help them, but to none effect. So this is Israel's God acting on their behalf, because Persia freed the Jews from Babylonian captivity. They permitted them to go back to Jerusalem and to rebuild it. You can read all about that in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. And of all the nations, Persia was very kind at this time to the Jews. The king, the great king of Persia, even helped the Jews financially to rebuild their temple and to reestablish their commonwealth in Judea. And there was a reason for this, and there was a reason why God used them to do this, because the Persians themselves were not idolaters. They scorned images of gods. They worshipped one god whom they called Mazda, the god of light, and his symbol to them was simply fire. And their descendants today are the Sikhs of India. But this is why we could see a Jewish girl become the queen of Persia. This is why her uncle could become one who sat in the gate of in Persepolis, in the Persian capital. You can read all about this in the book of Esther. And this is why he could sit in the gate, which meant he was one of the chief judges of the Persian court. And this is why the Persians so favored the Jews to rebuild their commonwealth, because they saw in them another people who did not worship idols. Now, they did not know about the Jewish God, Jehovah, but they heard about him from Daniel. You read the book of Daniel, how that he was counselor not only to the Babylonian king, but to the king of Persia, and he prophesied the great coming events which were future in his time. So this chapter tells us about the coming of Cyrus the Mede, and it tells us about God, who is sovereign in all of the affairs, not only of the universe, but of all of the nations on earth. They are all of them doing his will today. Then to read on from verse 8, we see that he is also the God of providence. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend. Here he said that Israel is his servant, but Israel, under the monarchy and under the judges, oftentimes rebelled against God, and they became idolaters. And when Judah had a good king, a godly king, the people worshiped God. When Judah had an ungodly king, such as Manasseh, they brought all kinds of idols, even into the temple. And that's why Jeremiah tells us, and others, that God caused them to go into captivity. That's why Jerusalem was destroyed, because Israel was God's servant, but they were not serving him. And that captivity in Babylon was not meant to be destructive to them, but to be instructive, to rid them of idolatry. And he turned the whole world upside down to accomplish that purpose. The whole of the Near East was never again the same after these events. And Israel was never again the same either, because from that day to this, they have never worshipped idols. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, he chose them to be his servant. He chose them, as we read elsewhere in Isaiah and elsewhere, to be a light to the Gentiles, to be a missionary people among the nations. And when they didn't do it, when they became like the other nations, he sent them into captivity. But they were still his chosen. And what they would not do as a kingdom, he forced them to do in exile. Because wherever the Jews went, they built what came to be called synagogues. In Hebrew, it would be something like Knesset, because synagogue is a Greek word. But wherever they were, they built houses of prayer. And whether they were in Persia, or in Babylon, or in Egypt, or in Greece, or in Rome, or in Libya, wherever they were, they built synagogues to read the law and to offer prayers to God and for Israel. And this attracted the Gentiles. And many Gentiles adhered to these synagogues. And in the New Testament, wherever the Apostle Paul went, he found a synagogue. And he found people there worshiping with the Jews who were not Jews. They were Gentiles who were attracted to the synagogue. Most of them did not become proselytes, but the Jews called them God-fearers. So in scattering Israel throughout all of the nations, they did become a missionary people. And in the years, centuries leading up to the time of the coming of the Lord, they were a missionary people. And they did actively seek the Gentiles to become worshipers of God with them. So what they would not do as a kingdom, they did do in dispersion. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend. Three times Israel, Abraham is called God's friend. Here and in 2 Chronicles 20 and in the second chapter of James. You, whom I took from the ends of the earth. Here he is predicting how the Jews in dispersion will return to their land. They did in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. That was their first dispersion. This also looks beyond that to the Roman dispersion, which is just now beginning, where they just now are beginning to gather into Israel from the ends of the earth. You whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corners, saying, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. This does not mean they all had a free ride, but it does mean that God kept them from being destroyed. He kept them from being assimilated by various means into other peoples, and that the Jews are a separate, distinct people to this day among the nations and in their own land is itself a fulfillment of this prophecy. Behold, all who are incensed against you shall be put to shame and confounded, and the Arabs would be well advised to pay heed to this. Those who strive against you shall be as nothing and shall perish. You shall seek those who contend with you, but you shall not find them. Those who war against you shall be as nothing at all. For I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say unto you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. Remember, all the way through these final 26 chapters of Isaiah, it is all poetry. It is one long, extended poem. It is, we might say, an epic. And fear not, you worm Jacob, you men of Israel. Here he is speaking of their degraded position in among the nations, where they are purified from idolatry, where they must be witness to the nations of the God of Israel, the worm Jacob. Elsewhere, they are likened unto a lion or unto various other more complementary terms. But a worm is helpless. And yet, worms are mighty. Life on this earth would not be possible as we know it without earthworms to condition the soil for life. And they can literally, as we see here, thresh a mountain. But here, and we have in our hymnal, in our Grace and Glory carols, we have a hymn that says, alas, and did my Savior bleed? Would my sovereign die? Would he devote that sacred head for such a worm as I? That's the way the poem was written. In our hymnal, we read, alas, and did my Savior bleed, and did my sovereign die? Would he devote a sacred head for sinners such as I? Christians today do not consider themselves worms. We have better self-image than that. We may be sinners and somewhat proud of it, but we're certainly not worms. But God called Israel a worm, and we should be careful about being too haughty. Fear not, you worm Jacob, you men of Israel. I am the one who helps you, declares the Lord. Your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I make you a threshing sledge, new, sharp, having teeth, and you shall thresh the mountains and crush them. You shall make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the tempest shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice in the Lord, in the Holy One of Israel shall you glory. This has not yet been fulfilled, but shall certainly be fulfilled. And it's referring to their system of harvesting, where they would cut their grain, tie them into sheaves, and bring them to the threshing floor. And they had what here is called a sledge. It's a platform with very sharp runners on the underside and weights placed on top of the sled. And then it was, with ropes, it was tied to a donkey who would go around and around over the harvest floor, and it would crush the grain out of the stalks, and it would chop the straw into fine pieces. And then they would take a wide paddle, and they would throw that chopped up grain into the air on a windy day, and the straw and the chaff would blow away, and the grain would drop to the ground. That is the figure that he's using here. I will make you a threshing sledge, make of you a threshing sledge, new and sharp and having teeth, and you shall thresh the mountains and crush them, and you shall make the hills like chaff. And we can see something of a forerunner in our day in the Israeli army that is the fear of all of those nations. That's the only thing that is keeping Iran in check today, is the fear of the Israeli army that had in three times defeated the united armies of all of the Near East nations. When poor and needy seek, when the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers on the bare heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will put in the wilderness the cedar, the acacia, the myrtle, the olive. I will set in the desert the cypress and the plane tree together. Very, very different trees, native to very different habitats, all brought together and planted in the desert. Well, Israel itself has been a part of that great Syrian desert for centuries. But in Israel, there is every sort of climate that you could find. There is, just north of present borders of Syria or Israel, there is Mount Lebanon, snow-covered year-round. There's the other Lebanon mountains, snow-covered year-round. There is the high country of the Golan, and there is the thriving plains of Galilee that are green and beautiful and productive. There is the desert valley of the lower Jordan. There are the hills of Samaria and Judea. There is the dry pasture lands of the south. Every climate is found in Israel. And this is what he is saying here about the cedar, the myrtle, the olive, the cypress, all together. And they all together do grow in, or at one time did grow in Israel. And the Jews are busy planting, replanting them now. And they may see and know and consider and understand together, the hand of the Lord has done this. The Holy One of Israel has created it. Poetically, This refers to all of the various Jewish groups scattered throughout the world who are themselves cultural units. And today in Israel, where they have all been brought together, you can hear almost any language of the world spoken in Israel today. And there's a big difference between the American Jew and the Iraqi Jew in Israel today, culturally and linguistically. But God has put them all together, and he will make of them, in his own time, one cohesive people. Then there is an extended poem here on the futility of idolatry that Israel came to realize and to with which they themselves taunted the Gentiles. Set forth your case, says the Lord. Bring your proof, says the King of Jacob. Let them bring and tell us what is to happen. Tell us the former things, what they are, that we may consider them, that we may know their outcome, or declare to us the things to come. Tell us what is to come hereafter. Tell us who will be the president of the United States in 2113. He will tell them who would be the general to come and help them 200 years from Isaiah's time. Tell us what is to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Do good or do harm, that we may be dismayed and terrified. Behold, you are nothing, and your work is less than nothing. An abomination is he who chooses you. Now here again he tells about the coming of Cyrus. I stirred up from the north, and he went from the north, and he has come. He came from the far east. Now he approaches the Holy Land from the north, which is the direction every conqueror had come to conquer Israel. I stirred up one from the north, and he has come from the rising of the sun, and he shall call on my name. He shall trample on rulers as on mortar, as potter treads clay. Who declared it from the beginning that we might know, and beforehand that we might say he is right? There is none who declared it, none who proclaimed, none who heard your words. I was the first to say to Zion, behold, here they are. But I give to Jerusalem a herald of good news. But when I look, there is no one. Among these there is no counselor, who, when I ask, gives an answer. Behold, they are all a delusion. Their works are nothing. Their metal images are empty wind. So this is the chapter that tells us about Israel's deliverer who would destroy Babylon and who would bring peace and the rebuilding of the Jewish commonwealth that eventually would grow into the Israel that we read in the New Testament. And going back to the chapter 40, who would say, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord.